Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
You know, there used to be only two ways to meet for business, over the phone or in person. Now there's a better way. Use GoToMeeting to meet online. With GoToMeeting, everyone sees your computer desktop on their computer screen, so you get the best of both worlds. It's like meeting in person, but without wasting time and money traveling. And your conference calls will be more effective. The best part is that you can actually try it for free. That's right, GoToMeeting is free right now for 30 days. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/podcast. That's gotomeeting.com/podcast for a free trial.
Markets playing a dangerous game of ping pong. Europe crisis is really starting to boil over, and the economic indicators you need to know about. All this and more coming up on episode number 225 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Thanks for joining me. Andrew Horowitz here, and it has been a very eventful a very wild and eventful week it has been, absolutely. You know, I had a friend, this is serious, and absolutely true, on, I think it was Monday or Tuesday, sent me a text and said, oh, I'm at Universal, and I'm going on one of these great roller coasters. I said, oh, that's great. And he said, yeah, it's like, I think it's one of the longer ones, like 5 minutes for a full roller coaster. I said, oh, wow, that's unbelievable. Listen, my roller coaster today is going to be about 8 or 9 hours. So, you know, take that with some grain of salt when you think about what's going on, because the gravity, the G-force, the movement from top to bottom, when you consider not only the regular market hours, but also you consider the after hours, you know, the futures trade overnight throughout the evening. And if you look at the range of the market movement on almost every single day, probably with the exception, slight exception of Friday, there was some just amazing moves that we're seeing. I mean, we're talking probably about 6% on average. Yeah, Monday was down 6.5% and Tuesday was up 4.5% and all that. But if you look at the overnights, I mean, you're seeing an extra 3% swing or so movement. And that's because, first of all, it's a bit thinner. And the second part is that the confusion and apprehension about the current situation, not only with the United States credit downgrade, but also really the whole European thing has come to a head. So what we're going to do today is talk a little bit about the things that you really need to be looking at, noticing, recognizing, focusing on. I'm going to keep this show today kind of very directed and pointed to that, and talk about a few different things. And then we're going to talk about the whole idea of, you know, what are the markets doing, and what, if anything, can you do in this market to either make some money, which would be, of course, the way you want to play, or maybe, you know, not lose as much money. So I think that that's an important thing. I want to mention that next week coming up, we have Sanjay Das, who is our good friend. I've been talking about this whole European situation with him, and it is really a very, very, it's a very concerning issue, because what's happening is that the information out of Europe is not matching up to reality, it seems. We'll talk about that in a second also. But we're going to get with Das. I read a great piece he wrote this week and last week about Europe, and really, is there enough money to cover the necessary amount of backstop for the various countries that are in trouble? And because of some of the potential for a downgrade, it creates a very strange circumstance, because some of the countries that are involved, if they do get a downgrade such as France, it creates a problem for the backstop fund. So there's all these intertwined and entangling issues right now when it comes to that. And then also next week, we have David Widmer, who is the author of Aftershock, Protect Yourself and Profit in the Next Global Financial Meltdown. Now, I want to ask him
how he has the same name, I don't know, as the Robert Reich book, which is called Aftershock. I got to find out more about that, because Robert Reich wrote a book back a few years back. Let's see what year, if I can find out what that was. Let's see, 192, not too long ago, about a year and a change ago. It was only about 7 months ago. I take that back. He wrote about 7 months ago. Aftershock, The Next Economy and America's Future. And this one is Aftershock, Protect Yourself and Profit in the Next Global Financial Meltdown. We got to figure out how that worked out, you know, and we'll get to the bottom of that next week. But it should be an interesting discussion nonetheless. And let's get right to, first of all, the markets. You know, there was, did you see the movie? You must have seen this. Hangover and The Hangover 2. Very funny, very ridiculous, but very funny movies. There was a scene in there with a dentist who lost his tooth. And if you didn't see it, I'm not going to give you the whole movie here, but lost his tooth and all these things were happening bad. He kind of just, at one moment of just hair-raising fear and panic, he said, "What the hell is going on?" I mean, he started really freaking out and just asking what's going on. And kind of that's where I think people were this week, because there was this dramatic move down that probably was expected after the U.S. downgrade, but then this really unbelievable, powerful bounce on Tuesday, and then a turnaround the different direction, down again on Wednesday. Thursday came back up, and Friday started down around the world and then picked up steam and actually finished higher. First time, I think it was in the last, I think it's close to about 5 weeks, that 2 days in a row actually finished higher on the markets. Now, I don't think that makes a trend, but I think it was kind of interesting. There's a few points that you have to consider when you look at these current markets as where is that final support going to be and where are the players drawing the line in the sand? So right now, when you look at the markets, what was the reason for the big sell-off and the panic? If you look at a chart of the S&P 500, I want you to think of something. We've talked about this over the last year, and this is really, I think, the key point to all of this. The ride up over the last year, generally speaking, has been on very, very light volume. Compared to when there is selling that goes on, there's heavy volume. Now, that's an important point. Now, a lot of players say, well, you know, volume doesn't matter anymore. You know, until it does, of course. But volume doesn't matter when the markets move up. Of course, they'll give you the opposite discussion, that when markets move down on light volume, they say, oh, look at that. That didn't mean anything. You know, look at that. Markets moved down and it was on light volume. You know, that means that there was no such benefit to the market. But when it moves up on light volume, that was, of course, a good thing. So you got to take all these commentary and pundits with a bit of a grain of salt. But there was this rise over last year on very muted volume. And during the day, sometimes you would look at a chart and you look at the volume of a stock, or more appropriately, we're talking about an index right now, and notice, wow, look at that. You're up 0.5% on the market and or a percent, and it's really, the volume's just nothing. You know, what's pushing that? It was just apathy. It was just a lack of any conviction, except for people who were just picking up some shares here and there. And that would just push the markets up. Now, if you look at that time range and you look at, let's say this year, 2011. If you look at that and you look at the write-up and you look at that overall volume chart, and in particular, if you turn on its side, if you can actually look at the volume at price, the volume at price, and you look at how the market had a significant amount of volume, and let's call it at the 1275 level, there was that line in the sand. Once it got below there, there really wasn't a lot of play. There wasn't a lot of volume that was convicted buying. And when it fell through that point, all of that lack of conviction quickly cratered the market. An air pocket, we call that. Not often do you see those kind of things, but you find an air pocket where maybe there was a gap up, and you've heard of gap fills before. Just a gap, and there was no volume in between, so when it comes through there again, it just falls very quickly back down or moves back up through it. And that's exactly what happened here. There was multiple air pockets. The same thing would happen with silver. If you look at silver, what happened when it hit that 40 plus, you know, mid to high 40s level, and then all of a sudden just dropped down. There was an air pocket there. So the S&P 500 Dow had this air pocket, and when the S&P rating came in and combined with a variety of other really negative indicators in terms of economics, some outlook from CEOs that were questionable, what happened was that air pocket hit, and lo and behold, dropped the markets down very severely. Now, it bounced at, I think it was 1101 to be exact, on Tuesday before it started turning around and coming back up. So 1100 is kind of the line in the sand right now. 1119, I want you to mark these down on a chart. 1119 is an important level as well, coming down past that because that was a couple days of support there. But generally speaking, again, you know, really we have to get past 1200, hold it with conviction on some decent volume to see if we can really sustain this next level. The problem we're having right now is the continuation of mixed economic signals and mixed earnings numbers. Now, let me give you a couple of points about that. The economic signals that we're seeing right now, a great example would be Friday. Now, Friday we saw retail sales that came out at 0.5, 0.5% higher. And that was right in line with estimates. But what was nice about that was it was still 4 months of continual upward movement. And this was a pretty good month, 0.5, considering the timing, considering the backdrop of economics, the slowing consumer confidence, etc. Well, that came out and that was a good number. And it's a little bit backwards looking, but again, it helped the concept that, well, maybe things aren't that bad. Consumers are not just, you know, abandoning buying everything. So, you know, when you look at that, you have to say, okay, well, the bottom line is that that's a good thing. Now, right after that, we saw the University of Michigan consumer confidence, the preliminary number for this month. And I got to tell you something. It was not only awful. I mean, words can't describe how bad this number was. The expectations were for somewhere about 62 to 63. And that already would have been a very low number for that particular index. That would bring you back to somewhere about midpoint, May 2009. That's where the confidence was at that point. Now, here we are, past the time period where we saw a lot of the European situation starting to slow down. We saw stock markets getting a bit rocky back starting in May, June. And then on top of that, we saw that there was this upheaval in Washington. The number came in at about 54. Now that dates back to the 1980s. So in other words, it was below 2008 low. It was below the 2002 low. Or 2001, 2000, whatever you want to take out of that. It was below all back to the early 80s when the markets were really in pretty bad shape at that point and the economy was really at a point that people were just totally freaking out. What does that mean? Well, that's a bit more of a forward-looking number. So we have the backward-looking number saying, okay, things weren't that bad. Forward-looking number says consumers are really nervous and upset. Confidence is broken, and I would consider that broken. Yet at the same time, most newspapers that you read and commentary that you hear, see, will be saying how, wow, markets went up because we saw retail sales in good shape. Markets went up only because, frankly, there was a lack of any bad news otherwise. We didn't see anything happening in the Eurozone that was really a problem. And at this point, we didn't see any political wrangling over anything. And there was this big dive. So people said, you know what, I'm picking up some shares here because, quote unquote, things are cheap at this point. Now, realize this whole idea of things are being cheap, things are being expensive is quite a, I think it's a nefarious statement because what happens is people think that, well, we're going to buy because it's down. And I could tell you an example of that. Last night I was at a party. And we're sitting around a table, and somebody started talking, oh my gosh, you see the stock market last week. Yeah, we saw it. Everybody saw it. Well, boy, it's time to buy. And I said, really? Love to hear why. Tell me why. I'm game. I'll whatever you have to say. You know, I'd love to hear what your thesis is. Well, things are down. I said, okay, yeah, I got that. What's your thesis? What, you know, just give me a broad base of why is it time now versus last week versus next week? And why is it time to buy? Well, he said, no, I just said it because things are down. I said, oh, that's your whole reason? Well, he said, yeah, you look at things like a company like Dry Ships. It's down, you know, way down. It was in the 100, now it's in the in the teens and even below that. And it's, you know, really, I mean, it's a good buy. Look how far down it is. It's got to turn around and go back up. I said, well, tell me something. What does dry ships do? He said, I don't know. So I said, case closed. I mean, how do you buy something you don't even know what it does? I mean, just at least know what it does. And why do you expect that a stock that is all the way down just necessarily has to go back up? Plenty of stocks that go down don't ever come back up. And I think stocks that are down at those kind of levels compared to where they were at a time when there's a lot of recovery that went on probably deserve to be at those levels. There's something going on inside of that stock, inside of the company. Something to do with something that's just not right. So he said, you know what? I kind of can go with that. I said, okay, good. He said, you know, I said, you know, what about those stocks like, I don't know, like a Netflix or a Chipotle or an Apple? Or, oh, he says, those are too expensive. I said, well, why are they expensive? He says, look at the price. I said, what does the price have to do with anything? He says, well, you know, I could buy, let's say, back to dry ships for a few dollars a share. I get a lot of shares. I could buy Apple. I can only buy a few shares because it's in the, you know, in the high 300s. I said, yeah, but 10% on a stock is 10% on a stock. If it moves up 10%, one moves up a little bit less because it's a low-value stock, and the other one moves up a little bit more because it's a high-value stock. So what's the difference? Wouldn't you rather be in the companies that are doing the best, that have the greatest opportunity, regardless of price, not just buy something because it's down? In fact, I said, why not start thinking about buying stocks when they're moving higher, not lower? You may miss a couple of percent here or there, but if you can get them when they start that move, that's possibly a better way to go. Buying on the dips all the time, you don't know when that dip is going to stop. So wait for confirmation on the move back up. Not one day, not 2 days. It could take a little bit longer. So have a little patience. So then that brought me back to my thought about where are we in the markets today? Well, 2 days doesn't make a stabilization. We're clearly in a downtrend. There's no question about that. We still have a lot of things which we're going to talk about in a moment pertaining to Europe that we have to look at. But one of the things that really turned things around on Tuesday last week was that Bernanke, Federal Chairman Bernanke said, Federal Reserve Chairman, he said, we think that the economy, from what we can see, is in much, I'm paraphrasing, much worse shape than we originally anticipated. Well, surprise, surprise, buddy. I mean, obviously, I think that you knew how bad it was, but really you wanted to see if things turned around before you let on to everybody else that it was bad. And that's why you kept the QE going and all the things that you did. Extraordinary low levels of interest rate for some time to come. And what they did was they changed the language, which may not seem like a big deal on the surface, from an extended period of time of low interest rates, in other words, the 0 to 0.25%, to a targeted date, 2013. Now, that brought up two questions once I saw that. The first question was, how does that change anything? If you had this extended period of time, which nobody knew how long that was going to be, month, year, week, now you have it targeted 2013. I suppose what that means is a lot more comfort in the markets, that interest rates will stay down, and you know what you're dealing with. There are no surprises here. Now, on the other hand, I thought, wow, they're keeping interest rates low till 2013. What does that mean? Well, as they said, there was a lot of slack in the economy. The unemployment rate was unacceptably high. And on top of that, the economy and economic condition has been deteriorating, and there is some concern about what's going on and the resulting factors that we can see here and that we'll feel here from Europe. So we have two sides of the equation there. We have one, the admission by the Fed that things aren't so good and they're not getting better. And we do have at least the low interest rates in providing some kind of a, we'll call it stimulus, or at least some kind of benefit to things like stocks, etc., in the face of a downgrade just a few days prior. Now, what a lot of people thought would happen with a downgrade would be that there'd be a sell-off of the U.S. Treasuries, there'd be the dollar would, you know, get weak and all that, and some of that happened, but you know what didn't happen? The sell-off. There was a stampede. There wasn't a rush. There wasn't a movement. There wasn't a direction. There was a stampede into long and short and midterm treasuries. In fact, I have never seen that kind of movement in the long bond in a day where we saw a movement of, I think it was Thursday, we saw a 5% move on the price of the long bond. That's extraordinary. We saw historically low rates on the 2 and 10 year. That's extraordinary. Why is that? You have to ask, why is that? Well, one thing is that we have confirmation that Bernanke is going to be keeping interest rates low for some time and is going to use all the power that he has to do so. Okay, so that's interesting. That's good. That would lead people to say they feel some safety in the bonds not being, you know, sold off too dramatically. But on the other hand, it also says that people are nervously moving into what they believe is the safest instrument right now and rotating out of stocks in order to get themselves their portfolios in a position really to combat a potential recession. Because we're at recession levels when it comes to much of the economics that have been reported, unemployment, the long bond and the short bond levels, as well as confidence. We're at recession levels. Now, we won't know for another couple of quarters if, in fact, we slip back into a recession. Whether it's a double dip or a new recession, doesn't matter. But we won't know. But all the signs are pointing to that. The VIX hit 42. And still, we're seeing that there is this cry from the pundits on TV saying that stocks are oversold and cheap. And again, that's good because if they keep saying that, the theory is that they keep on buying and create some confidence, and that makes the stock markets move up. But you know, the biggest problem that the stock markets have right now is the fragile nature of the banking sector. You look at Goldman Sachs and Bank of America and Citi and Wells Fargo, and you look at Morgan Stanley, they look absolutely awful. Those charts look horrible, with a capital horror. Seriously, I mean, these charts look awful. The big reason is that you're seeing a potential reflection of what's going on in Europe here. Now, on Wednesday of last week, SocGen, one of the biggest banks over in France, there was a strange thing that happened. Now, I wanted to set this up, that realize that France obviously has one of the biggest economies throughout the Eurozone. They're one of the major backstop nations that is helping the Eurozone and the countries that have all of their sovereign debt woes, you know, get out of all the problem, or at least stabilize the problems, or try to stabilize the problems with Germany. Those two are really the players in this whole game. Now, if you recall a few weeks ago, there was the stress test that were put out by Europe on their banks. There was about, I think, maybe a dozen banks that failed the stress tests. I believe five of those were from France. That's interesting. This is one of the countries that's supposed to be backstopping everything else, and their banks are in awful trouble. Why? They own a ton of the Greek debt. They own a ton of Italian debt. Italy has the fourth most debt to GDP of any country in the world, and they're the eighth largest economy in the world. Now, when you look at what happened with SocGen last Wednesday, it was a strange situation. In the morning, there was a report that SocGen, and backed up, by the way, of a snapshot of this information, that they were selling gold that they held at below spot price. So let's just say, just pick a number, that gold was at 1,800. They were selling it at 1,775, let's say. Now, why would they do that? So you looked at the newspaper, and you looked at the clip, and clearly it showed that. They were selling below spot. I think the first thing that happened was that people panicked. Oh, my. SocGen needs cash. There's a big drive into the gold market. They'll get the first dibs on all the money coming in so that they can clean up whatever mess they have right now. Markets took down SocGen pretty hard. As a matter of fact, the CEO appeared on CNBC and a variety of news outlets had a statement that there's nothing wrong and, you know, making a big mistake, et cetera, and that the information that was printed was inaccurate and a mistake, that the information that was printed was not actually happening. There was no desire to sell gold below spot. And it calmed down markets for a few minutes, but that really took a toll on European banks as well as U.S. banks. And they continued to fall throughout the week. There was one day there, 2 days there, they really took a nice upturn, but they really started to fall very dramatically. Then we saw some further lawsuits against with Bank of America and AIG, and then we saw some other things with Goldman, and then bad numbers out of this one, and, you know, the question about, uh-oh, here we go again. At the end of the week, about five countries banned short selling, some just directly on financials, some on all stocks inclusive, for a period of anywhere from 15 days to, I think, 3 months. Now, if you remember what happened back in 2009, I believe it was, where there was the initial drop of the banking stocks and then the ban on short selling, that didn't help anything. It's kind of funny because it's a stupid idea. We talked about it here. We said it was the stupidest idea, and it was the most devastating blow to capital markets, free capital markets, that I've ever seen, aside from what's gone on for the last 2 years again. But this really was a changing force, because now all of a sudden there was, I think, a realization by investors that there was something very much wrong, that the government was stepping in to try to stop any kind of selling of these stocks that would end up being devastating, even though they all knew that there was a big problem underlying the company itself. So it was almost an admission by the SEC and the government that, yeah, we know there's something wrong here, but we are not able to stop it right now. And while investors may be totally right about this, we have to strong arm them to a point that they won't do this anymore. What ended up happening was the longs ended up selling anyway with the realization of what was happening. Nobody was buying shares. And the biggest problem was that the lack of short sellers, I think, created a much longer period for recovery for any of these stocks, because there was no spark that led to a short cover rally at the level that it could have. Because shorts have to eventually buy back shares, right? Well, they don't have to. But if they want to keep their money and make money and profit, just like a long has to sell, a short has to buy. So if the shares start moving up, shorts are inclined to cover their positions, which creates further buying pressure, and that creates further upward move that will possibly create further moves to the upside and more short selling. And the cycle goes on and on and on. So now that we have this same thing happening there, obviously nobody learned from the mistakes. They just keep on making the same mistakes over and over in government. And by the way, they're not going to learn this time either. They don't have much tools. You know, Bernanke is doing the same thing over and over again, even though we know that this whole policy of low interest rates and quantitative easing has really maybe stabilized but not helped anything at the level that it maybe could have if the money was put to better use. And Bernanke keeps on using the same tools over and over because there's not much left. In fact, the QE, which was originally like an armor-piercing bullet, has turned into a bit of a rubber bullet at this point. There's not much else that QE really could do at this point, because bond prices are as low as they can get, or close to. So the SocGen situation and the banks that are now off limits, the question is going to be, what are investors going to do? Are they going to come after the banks here because they have exposure, and at least it's peripheral exposure, but will they come after the banks here and short them? Quite possibly. We started to nibble at some, after a little bit of the rise from the depths where they were, we started to nibble on some short banking shares on the SKF. And really not getting too involved in these markets right now, because like I said, it's one of the things that you want to stay away from when you see the markets in this kind of correction, until you can see much more stabilization. One of the things we also seen last week, and I want you to kind of focus on all this, and we'll bring it to a real focus point in a moment, But there was a great deal of talk about insider buying, that there hasn't been this level of insider buying since about 2009 at the depths of the problem when the market hit the lows. Now, for the bulls, and the bullish argument is, hey, that's great. That's saying that there's a lot of belief in the companies and that various managers and the insiders are stepping it up because they believe their shares are undervalued. On the other side, you'll hear that, you know, if you look at the actual times that insiders bought and you do a chart and plot that, they don't have the greatest record of identifying their stocks being under or overvalued. So both insider buying and selling. Again, you never hear about all the insider selling and a lot of the things that go on as you know, the bullish story doesn't get, the bear story doesn't get as much play as the bullish story. And that's good. You know, we want markets to go up. We want stocks to go up. That's a good thing. Just want a little bit of a fair, balanced reality view. That would be nice also, wouldn't it? So realize that even though it does sound really good that insiders are buying right now, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a good time to buy because they make announcements that they're buying. They did it, this is a planned buy a few months ago. They could have tried to buy possibly at a planned sale over time when the market was close to its high. Things weren't really changing as much. All right, so that's the whole story a lot of the story of the stock market. We have European woes, and that's really going to drive a lot of things that are going on in terms of the gyrations and the volatility. And it's interesting to note that it took about a year for the reality of the depth of the problems to really sink into most investors, because right now we're seeing this conversion of the European problems, rolling over economics, tightening in many of the emerging markets. All this is coming to a head right now. And not to mention the downgrade of the U.S. debt. One of the things we're going to have to watch is whether or not France is downgraded. That is going to be a problem. You need to watch for this, because if that does come to fruition anytime soon, which you have to wonder, with all the things going on there and the finances of France, if the U.S. was downgraded, you would think France should be downgraded. I mean, not for anything more than the fact that their economics probably, or their debt structure and all that looks no better. I mean, just keeping it fair, right? But if that happens, there is a bigger problem, because they're acting as a backstop and certain credit requirements they have to have and who can do this. And there's all sorts of real miserable after effects if they get downgraded. So I want to also talk to you about the economics that are going to be happening that we need to be aware of. Now, I'm going to put this on the actual notes and the actual post for this particular episode. You know, if you ever want to find out what's going on and some of the things we talk about, thedisciplinedinvestor.com has a wealth of information. And I'm going to talk to you in a moment about some of the things we wrote over the last week or so. But inside of the show notes, we often put a couple of charts or some things that we've talked about, or you'll find that throughout the site. So if you're listening to this sometime during the week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and you didn't look at thedisciplinedinvestor.com and look at some of the things that we're talking about, the stocks that we're talking about, like we're going to put up something about Spreadtrum Communications that makes some of the antenna arrays and some of the electronics for the mobile and the Androids, that's something you need to look at, because it gives you great ideas. We put up a screen last week on IPOs when we talked to Kevin Hoffman. This week, we have a screen of showing the highest level of downgrades, the greatest number in percent of downgrades of European banks over the last 4 weeks that you need to probably take a look at to find out which banks and at least the trend of what's happening. So when you look this week and you look at this particular post for this show, and again, we have other things besides the show notes, you'll find upcoming economic reports. First thing you're going to see Monday morning is the Empire Manufacturing. Now, I would say that looking at the consumer confidence levels, the business inventory levels, which recently came out, the inventory to sales levels, as well as retail sales, you would think that this should be a pretty, I would say, questionable number. It's really dropped over the last several months. Last was about negative 3.75. Survey showing about a zero on it. I would think that there's going to be a disappointment here. And if there's not, that's going to be actually a pleasant surprise. Then you have things like coming out next week, the housing market index, import and export prices, of course, important to see how there's going to be a dramatic change, if any, in margin squeezing going on, margin squeeze and margin compression. Important prices on a year-over-year basis was 13.6% higher. I'm expecting more of the same. We have housing starts coming out, which look like they're going to be, at least compared to last, a little bit lower. And industrial production capacity utilization, producer price index, CPI, very big week. This is towards the end of the week now. We also have, of course, initial jobs coming out, continuing claims. Leading indicators, very important. And then at the end of the week, we have the Philadelphia Fed, a very important index, and existing home sales. So we have, I don't know, this is 30 different data points that are coming out. Now, you'll look at the trend when you see this also on the site. You'll see the trend of what's actually been going on. And you notice, for the most part, there's either a stable level of overall trend or it's been dropping. And some of the lowest points on all this have been very recent over the last couple of months. Now, you need to watch this because these are some of the things that are really going to shape the markets. The world is watching the U.S. The world always watches the U.S. because we are the biggest economy in the world, at least now, until China surpasses us. So you have to take a look at these and just understand that this is going to shape. Sometimes it does, by the way, and sometimes it doesn't. The economics sometimes do shape the markets and sometimes they don't. Right now, we're getting towards the end of earnings season. So there's really not much that earnings are going to, you know, do to prop up or push down markets. Nothing, you know, there's a few majors coming out, no question, but it's still not the level that we saw before. About three quarters of the way, or a little bit more than that, through. But what you have to look at is, you know, what is the ongoing trend for the economics? And without the stimulus that has been going on, and with the drawdown in Europe, and with the slowdown and the slowdown in Asia, you know, you're going to see that economics are really going to be somewhat miserable for some time. And that does not do well for markets. Now, that doesn't mean it's necessarily going to fall off a cliff. But, you know, it's very hard to see, with everything that's going on, how this trend is going to reverse immediately. It may stabilize, but reversing immediately would need a lot more consumer confidence. It would need a lot more sales. It would need a lot more people working. And that is not the equation that we're seeing right now, unless something fundamentally changes. Now, the stock market will totally ignore this if there's a gigantic stimulus package that gets thrown on it, something remarkable out of the Fed, or, you know, next earnings season or running up to next earnings season. But right now, the fragility of the stock market and investor confidence in what we saw last week needs some time to heal. So hopefully, if there's such a thing, you know, economics are not going to just totally be devastatingly ugly and cause further volatility. But here's the point. When you see volatility like this in the market, it's not time to just step in at any point. It's kind of like crossing the street when there's a mess of cars coming through. You want a little bit more of a stability. You want a light that shows you when you can go and when you can't. You just don't want to walk across a busy street. You want something that is controlled, just like the stock market. You don't want to just get in when things are just bouncing all over the place. Now, you may say, well, you know, I got in when it was the low for the... Okay, that's great. That's great. You got in. That's so rare. So hard to call a high or a low. So hard to catch it. You've heard of don't catch a falling knife, right? Because it'll cut you. Well, sometimes you get lucky. Sometimes the falling knife falls and it's, you know, before it gets to you, it stops and turns around because it really shouldn't have been falling to begin with. Yeah, that happens. But more often than not, the incredible amount of volatility on extraordinary volume, mostly seen in a very, very, very long time, especially during the summer, by the way, is going to be something that we need to really focus in on. Now, last week on The Disciplined Investor, here's a couple of things we talked about, and we do a lot of graphics with things to kind of give you both sides, the discussion of a topic as well as the trend. So last week we talked about, since the last podcast, or right before the podcast, we talked about markets. Are they oversold or more pain coming? Capitulation or what's going to happen is just the beginning of the next downturn. So we gave some examples of what to look at, where to go. We told you that we talked about the IPOs and the a stock screen, some of the things you need to look at. Talked about China's inflation predicament. No easy way out was our title of that. You know, because if you look at what the what China has to do to calm down their inflation, it doesn't help out the rest of the world. They don't necessarily have to be a player that is helping out the rest of the world, but they benefit. So in order for them to curtail their own inflation, they have to, in a way, hurt the rest of the world because they're going to slow down their consumption. At the same time, if they do that, there's a real problem that they may do a consumption slowdown so great of the rest of the world that it really affects them in a much greater manner. So there really is no, they're painted quite into a box. Fed statement we talked about when it came out on Tuesday, we did a side-by-side comparison of what they said last time and the differences in their statement this time. Each month we put that out when it comes out, and you can see how that lines up, and we highlight, actually there's a place from Bloomberg, we get this great highlighted piece, and we kind of talk about that and add some things to it. Then we talked about the Eurobanks. You should take a look at, you know, the carnage. I got to tell you something. I was surprised to see just how much some of these stocks are down year to date. You know, the markets are down year to date, 5, 7, 10%, depending on where you're looking. Over there, they really fell off a cliff in Europe, in Asia, in emerging markets, anywhere from down, you know, 25, 30% to maybe down 15% all over the world. But if you look at the individual stocks, in particular, the European banks, oh, they look horrible. I mean, horrible. You need to look at that if you can. And then we talked about J.P. Morgan. Jamie Dimon came out with a comment. He says he guarantees that in 5 years the stock will be higher. I thought that was interesting. I thought it was kind of crazy for him to say that. And I wonder, you know, what kind of penalty that will come from the S&P. Not the S&P, the SEC. Maybe the SEC. We'll give him a little chat. Seems like that shouldn't be something that they should just be able to say. But, and then finally, there was something about the 30-year bond auction that came out because there was a lot less demand for that 30-year. And that makes a lot of sense. That makes more sense than the drive of markets and that stampede that we saw after the downgrade. And that was probably the more realistic, the most realistic thing and the most expected thing that happened last week. A lot of other things were kind of surprising. So those are a few of the things we talked about. We talked about all those throughout the week and put up some commodity chart books and expectations of employment, et cetera. These are things that are important, I think, to look at. We're going to try to put up also some notes. We're going to talk about spread trim communications. We have another screen that's coming up about the banks I mentioned. We also have a discussion of where the points are of interest. Again, that 1101, 1100 number on the S&P. Top end to 1,200, those are just round numbers. And then where in between, we'll put those up during the week so you can kind of play along. And then also, you know, what stocks are possibly looking good. We put those up every once in a while, obviously just for you to consider, just to take a look at. And of course, don't forget that on Wednesdays it comes out, the Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, or DH Unplugged, we call it, short term. And we talk about a lot of things there, and we have an actual sheet that tracks all of the stocks that we talk about that we think could be interesting moving forward. And right now we actually cleaned up the sheet because we hit a lot of stops after things go up and then they come back by 10%. We're automatically out. That's just the rule we have in this game that we play. And then if they go down 10% from where we bought it, we go out. We're sold out. So you'll take a look at what we have on there right now. There's about five or six different stocks on there. But every Wednesday, if you didn't listen to it before, I want you to start listening to it now. It's a great conversation with myself and John C. Dvorak. Get that on iTunes, so make sure you do that. The other thing I think that we have just a couple minutes for, let me just go back on my notes here for a second. I know I had something I want to talk about. Talked about all this. Talked about the air pockets. Okay. The other thing that I wanted to mention to you was that if you start looking at the ETFs out there, the doubles and triples, some of them have moved up dramatically recently because there's been a trend in one direction. So when you see the trend in any direction that holds for some time and not a lot of back and forth consolidation, these ETFs really start to compound and make some good money. But when they go the other way, they fall very quickly. So in other words, if you have a short ETF, a two or three time, and it moves up, and it moves up, and it moves up, and all of a sudden the markets turn and they start moving the other direction pretty significantly. One of the great things that we've seen is that you can actually go out and short the longs. Okay, short the longs or short the shorts, right? Depending on which way the market's going. But by doing a short, oftentimes what happens is, if you can do such a thing, you'll get an extra benefit because when they drop and deflate, it seems they really drop a lot harder, especially the shorts. They drop a lot harder when the market changes direction. Now, not just one day or 2 days. I mean, you know, directionally changing and trend changing. So if you wanted to theoretically go long, it may be wise to actually short the short versus going long the long. Does that make sense? There's been a lot of studies about this that you can actually do something like go short, go short the long. So in essence, you have a equal port, right? So you're equally long and short now. And you'll make a little bit of money in there because of the way the volatility works. There's been times when it doesn't work so well. Again, directionally. But there's been times it's been absolutely beautiful where it's just a general chop to the markets. Because there's a natural give back because it's only a one-day performance that they're really trying to capture. So it's not a compounded performance. Anyway, something to think about. The other thing I want you to think about is take a look at your portfolios. Just take a glance. Do you have any of those preferred stocks in there or maybe some lower rated munis? We sold out of, if not many, all of our Ginnie Mae, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac portfolio last week. And individual bonds in particular, they're being downgraded as well. And my concern is that, you know, not so much they're just going to default or anything like that, but, you know, if we could see the continuation of what's going on with the foreclosure market, the housing market, and the potential for a refi, those are not going to be worth as much because they'll be liquidated. In other words, yes, they'll be worth more because they're a higher interest rate, but there'll be a lot of liquidations and return of principal. So we want to get ahead of that. At the prices that I think are close to the top we've seen in a very long time at the mid to end of last week and capture that because I just don't see the real benefit of those mortgage portfolios moving forward right now. We also sold our real estate finally in our global allocations. We made a nice piece on those, on the REITs. And again, trying to stay away from the financial sector again right now. There's a lot of real negativity involved in the numbers, in the outlook. And there's a real question as to how they're going to make money moving forward. Not to mention, you know, the potential of various new legislative actions that are coming into play and the requirement to get rid of things like the Volcker Rule, getting rid of trading floors and proprietary trading and the potential for failures of either municipalities or sovereigns. The banks get hit right between the eyes with all that. And then when you consider the unemployment situation, again, all of this linked right back to the banks being in bad shape. That's why Bank of America is under 7, even though Barron's this week said, oh, there's a 35% upside. And 35%? Who cares? That brings it back up to 9. That's still crap. I mean, it's still junk. So you want to buy Bank of America or Citi here? For what? If you could explain to me where the benefit is, if you could explain to me a thesis of why, except for the fact that it's low, that this is going to go up. Okay, I'll listen. But, you know, there's so much cloudiness and so much problems behind the whole Bank of America and Citi and Morgan and Goldman. And I just, you know, JP is probably the shining star of the group. You know, but besides that, we just don't see the benefit right now. I mean, things may change. But right now, the lack of clarity on the underlying portfolio, I think, has caused Bank of America to be down, what, 50% or 40% this year, or maybe more than that. And Citi to keep on getting, you know, crushed. And things like GM just can't get out of its own way. And Ford, these were great recovery plays from the bottom. But right now, where we're getting into the next stage of markets and next stage of the economic move, whether it's going to be stabilization or just, you know, kind of staying at this point or even going down where Goldman and JP downgraded, so did the Fed downgrade the outlook for GDP. You know, we're talking about the 1.5% range over the next year. It's awful. Anyway, we'll talk more about this. We have some great guests coming up next week. Do me a favor, tell a friend. If you haven't done so already, kindly, go over to iTunes and leave a review for The Disciplined Investor. Make sure to listen to DH Unplugged and The Winning Investor.
Pick up a copy of my book before the year starts. And if you haven't done so already, make sure to go over to this post, this show notes. Click on the little button that says, let me see the virtual tour of the TDI Managed Growth Strategy and take a quick tour, a virtual tour. And you'll see everything how we do it. We take clients' portfolios that we manage that are $50,000 or more. And what we do is we actually will manage a portfolio just like we talk about it. You know, in and out of the market, we'll do things like a day trade, scalp trade, buy and hold, use options, short, long, all that. And it's, you could see it's transparent because you see everything that's going on. We have a client website that's password protected only for you. Every day we write what's going on in there so you know what's happening. So you get to follow along with what's going on and be involved. Anyway, check that out at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Until next week, great guest coming up. Write me if you'd like. Ask Andrew at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Have a safe week. Be careful. Be nimble. That's what I want you to do. Be nimble. And make sure to make some money, okay? Thanks so much for listening. See you soon. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.